This is raw. This is not something that I'm even going to broadcast today because I haven't even properly run it past my business partner. But as you may or may not know, that I've been working together with Jonathan Am on the development of a new business. Now, it's actually the merging of my own business into his business and the growth of a much bigger business. And we're in the process of developing a business plan and all the clarity about, you know, where's our market, where's our customers, what exactly are we offering, where are we going to make money, etc., etc. But there's been something missing. And this morning, I think it fell into place. What's been missing has, for me at least, has been clarity about the name of the company. And, you know, I have had until this morning the idea that we leave the blooming name until the end, we'll get totally clear about everything, and then the name will be obvious, or we'll adopt a name that is our best shot at representing what it is. And that was how I parked it, was bothered by the issue about whether we were going to continue calling it Think Tank or whether we would modify Think Tank in some way. I knew that marketing right now would disappear. That couldn't be the name of the new company, and that I'm very comfortable with. But very uncomfortable really about any name. Went through thinking about things that were expressions of values like human, and Jonathan Am has recently been working with a company called Human and Kind, and that works great for that business, which is a skincare business. But the word human is very attractive to me because, for various reasons. And for example, Chris Brogan uses the word human in his Human Business Works. The thing about it is that name seems to me to work because it has the word works in it in addition to human. Otherwise, Human Business is too fluffy by itself. And we thought of other words like social good and things like that, but nothing worked at all until this morning. Something happened. There was in me some kind of a breakthrough. I don't know where it came from, to be truthful. It kind of happened in the shower. But when it happened, it just felt so right. A new name emerged suddenly, bang. And out of that, it was like cracking the atom because a lot of energy emerged. Now, we've still got a deadline tomorrow afternoon, complete the second draft of the business plan. And that's hard work. But out of left field came this sensation, this realization, this things coming together, and the name of a company emerged, and I'm really, really energized by the experience of clarity because it really encapsulates everything. I at no point in my pretending and being all very restrained about it, you know, I really feel that this captures the point of view of the client, you know, what the client wants. And he captures that in that the name of our company captures what the client wants. And that matters to me because I think, look, it's not so much what we do, it's what actually outcome there is for the client that really matters. Of course it matters to me what I do, a certain kind of work I want to do, certain way I want to do it. But the bottom line is that you get paid for the results that you create for your client. You don't get paid to simply exercise your own preferences, you know. You have to, in some cases, leave your own preferences, your own pet ideas at the door and go in, meet the client and work with where the client is at. And okay, there's lots of issues around that. But the key thing is that the name of our company conveys a message about a result that the client will have. And then the amazing part, and this is where it is really revolutionary, I think, is it also conveys what we are. We are a certain kind of company, and that's in our name. Now, of course, this conflicts as a style of naming with, for example, Apple. Now, you know, there's no indication to you, if you speak the word Apple, what you're going to get. It doesn't tell you the outcome you're going to get. It doesn't tell you what the company is going to do, except in the most oblique and iconic way, or, you know, that, you know, the apple is a source of nourishment, the apple is a sweet thing, the apple has got all sorts of, produces lots of great juice. And, you know, you can try and spin it if you like to say that, you know, the apple is... But, you know, we had apricot computers, you know. So, and if Steve Jobs had actually been working, picking bananas that summer, that he got the idea for Apple, maybe we'd all be going around sporting our bananas. And, you know, we'd all be talking, you know, because the banana would have been transformed. The apple has been transformed. The Beatles, of course, did Apple. And I haven't read Steve Jobs' biography, or the biography of Steve Jobs, so I can't even say a single thing about the connection between Apple, Abbey Road, and the Beatles, and that's another thing. So where are we? I'm at a juncture, and the crazy thing is that it's a bit like, you know, you're climbing Everest with somebody, and you find a new path, you find a new way forward, but you're out in front, if you like, on this particular occasion. Just so happens that you're leading the way with the crampons and the rope and everything like that, and you're at a point where you see a new way of getting to the peak, but you've got to take your partner with you. You've got people on the rope behind you, and, you know, you just happen to be on the front of the line today, and tomorrow you'll be at the back of the line. So, you know, it's really is amazing. So I record this in the full knowledge that the thing could get shut down after the conversation has had, because there's no way you can actually go forward into a situation where, you know, one partner in a team of two, or we will be more than a team of two, but, you know, at this point in time, that it's two people thinking out the core ideas. There's no way that you can run with what one feels enthusiastic about unless the other is, absolutely. I mean, search would have been nowhere if it was purely Sergey's baby. You know, Google would not be where it is today unless there were two obsessively driven people in the space called search. And I know we know, or I know because I read a book, that's about all I know, that they're two quite different personalities, and they have different angles, if you like, different wishes. You know, one wants to go into space and the other doesn't. You know, one wants to do the genes, map the gene pool. I'm not saying the other doesn't, actually, because I forget. But the key point is that it's the wonderful excitement of being in a state of uncertainty and, you know, hoping that your breakthrough will be seen as a breakthrough, and the rest will be revealed after lunch.
About the standing orders in City Council.
Extreme Christians, and they'll organise a vote against you. So what you need is somebody who's outside the political sphere to organise a public competition. A public competition, right? You get people submitting it, you get a debate about it indirectly. You don't say what it'll be used for, but you could say it could be used for all civic events. Cork is a society, it's multi. We now have people from other societies, and it doesn't come from any political party, or anybody, and we get a head of steam up about it. The winning one then has a lot of supporters. Now you can, now I know the alternative is to do nothing.
Well, the alternative was that we had a vote on it in City Council, and it was rejected 20 votes to 8. So, you know, it was heavily defeated. And people say that's democracy, and you have to accept democracy.
Democracy works in another way, too. You have a vote on something, and if you lose it, right?
Yeah.
In 18 months' time, you come back, and you have another vote, and you win. That is democracy, right? So what the good thing is, there has been somebody like Yates in another situation might have called a public disgrace. I've seen no publicity about it, mind you, but You know, some people would say it's a public disgrace, right? I know some people would say it's a success for... I'm quite interested in... I've just come back from Lourdes, right? I took my mother there. My mother's 86. I am an unbeliever, right? A self-professed unbeliever. Brought up a Roman Catholic. I know more about Roman Catholic Catholicism and Christianity than a lot of people, right? I once was an ardent, you know. I know my. I could argue Bible or quotations of Vatican II with anybody. But the point about this is that I went there and I had a wonderful pilgrimage. I put up 92 blog posts, 92 audio pieces about Lourdes.
How long were you in Lourdes?
5 days. With Limerick.
Did you spend any time with your mother?
Loads of. I know, you're right. But I mean, I've recorded the grotto, the mass, I've recorded deeply religious things, I've recorded the fun and games by the Limerick pilgrimage at night, I've recorded interviews with shopkeepers, interviews with French and German people there. There's a huge amount of stuff there for anyone who was interested in what's a pilgrimage to Lourdes really like. But I come back with a big interest in the, you know, I think it's possible to be, I know it's possible to be spiritual without belonging to a religious group.
Okay.
And I want to reclaim the ground of spiritual, humans being spiritual, from sects who claim we're right, they're wrong. Right?
And that's just, there's
and no acceptance. So I do have a kind of a personal mission. So I will think more about what you told me without saying anything to anyone publicly about it. But I do think that I do, the more I think about it, I mean, I'm thinking about, I know John Gilroy relatively well now. I do some work with him on Audioboo. I'm not a member of the Labour Party. I wouldn't even guarantee I'd ever vote for them, right?
Okay.
But I'm interested in making what politicians do transparent.
Okay.
That's my angle.
Okay.
So we do a whole series of Audioboos, I don't know how many there are now, in which I ask him to tell what are you doing, why are you doing it, you know.
And does he put that up on his own? Does he have a website? He does?
Do you know what I do? I think he has something, right? But the audio is the audio. I use just my iPhone in a cafe, usually in a cafe with him. They go up from my. They go onto Audioboo, which is. They go out on Twitter and Facebook Audioboo. Anyone can take them and put them on their Facebook page, right?
Yeah.
I imagine the only people who want to put them on their Facebook page are the Labour Party, right? I have encouraged them to do so. I try to encourage them to get there. I'd encourage any politician, you know, and I would publicize any. I think, by the way, if you know Simon Coveney well, right? Will you tell him one thing? Just at the beginning, I think it was, of the last election campaign,
I know what you're going to say,
he did 4 or 5 audio booths, which were fabulous.
And he's done nothing since.
No, they were brilliant. He got into the car one day in Dublin, and he was at the end of a week, and he said, "Boss, I got to drive home now to Cork now," or something like that. And it was absolutely real, great content, right? He did a number of them during the campaign. They were great. I mean, I've tried to tweet him and say, would you do any more, right? I've never met him in my life, right? The last time I physically saw him was at that meeting. But tell him that he really is good at it, number one. He was great.
Yeah.
He did it in a way that you wouldn't expect a politician to do it, to be honest. And from my perspective, he was relaxed. He was talking about he'd made some mistake. He'd assumed something, and he'd learned a lesson. I forget what he did, but it was great. And I would like many, many politicians to do that before the next election, general election campaign.
He did a lot of stuff at the time, you know. He was doing a lot of tweeting. He was doing video blogs, and everything else. And just once the election was over, it all stopped. And I was disappointed as well, because I thought he was quite good. He was interacting with people as well, you know. He'd reply. And he took it up again briefly during the last treaty campaign. Other than that, I have to say, I'm surprised.
The fact that he has such... I mean, he has natural talent, I think. But the other side of it is that he makes people like me get very cynical. That they're not genuinely communicating with citizens, they're just trying to get an extra vote, you know?
And,
but look, I'm dominating you, I don't want to, but it's lovely to meet you.
You too.
Look.
And stay in touch.
Till next time. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Look, I've got a dreadful head for names. Forgive me.
Peter from Team RPM.
Oh!
The GG boys. You're out in the office there one day.
Of course, Peter.
I spotted you sitting down in the office there one day. I was scratching my leg and I know that face.
Oh, I know. I'm this happens to me all the time.
Oh, I'm rude, by the way.
Look, a small thing about Coppinger, right? The family.
Yeah?
I went out by complete accident to Barry's Court.
Where's that again? I know that.
Right. That's the point. Hardly anyone's been there, right? It's amazing, by the way. It's run by the, it's managed by the OPW. It's out in Carrigtwohill.
Yeah.
From Carrigtwohill, across the motorway, go there. It is a stunning little castle with a wonderful tea room, great cakes and everything, beautifully kept. A wonderful orchard and a great herb garden.
There. Yes.
But the reason I'm mentioning is your family name. On the wall inside there is the family tree of the Coppingers.
Really?
Yes. And that. That, if that doesn't intrigue you, go there, right?
Oh, yeah.
I could.
Definitely, yeah.
But it is the one of these great places.
How do you remember that?
How did I remember
How did you remember that that was the Coppinger tree?
Oh, because when I saw the thing on the wall there, I said, there's a Coppinger family in Cork. They make uniforms.
Yeah. I've often been asked, am I related to them? Like,
A few years ago, again on Twitter, I stumbled across the Coppinger business. In fact, it might have been even I was talking to somebody on Audioboo. It might have been a connection at BNI. It could well have been. And I thought, oh, there's a business. See, I come from a background where I was in public transport for years.
Yeah.
So I have a kind of a natural interest in the fact that some people wear uniforms at work. I once was a general manager in a bus depot where I interviewed people for not wearing their uniform, right? So I have a history in the world of uniforms, right? Why you should wear your uniform. One thing led to another, you know? But I then stumbled actually into this thing on the wall, the Coppinger family tree.
It's mad.
All the way down.
I have done a little bit of research into the tree.
They married the Barrys?
Right.
Are they connected with the Barrys?
Yeah.
But there's a woman who was born in 1921. I'm not normally like this, by the way. I have a brother who's into family history, but I'm not. But it just fascinated me. There's someone who was born in 1921. She'd be 90 years of age now in the Coppinger family. I don't know if she's alive or dead, but she has a connection with Barry's court castle. Did you ever visit a National Trust property in the UK?
Never.
Okay. Well, I used to work for the National Trust. They have the highest standards. The garden in photo.
Yeah.
I'll be very crude and very quick just to make the point. It's a tip. A disgrace.
Okay.
It's a fabulous, fabulous garden, right?
Yeah.
In photo garden. It is, don't get me wrong, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But the actual rose garden there is a public disgrace. Right?
I'm comparing the English standards.
I went out of there on Sunday, disgruntled and fed up. My wife said, let's go to Barrancourt Castle. I went down. And I was railing in my head against the OPW. Our bloody civil servants couldn't organize a piss up in a brewery. They have no heart, no love of the place. It's just a bloody job. They run out of money and they do nothing except neglect the place. And the National Trust get volunteer gardeners. You can get people, you don't have to pay them. They'll weed the beds for you. Form clubs of gardeners, look after them, honour them, make them heroes, you know, all that sort of stuff. And people who are retired will come out and spend Thursday morning doing the garden, chatting to other retired people.
They would too, yeah.
I believe they would.
So then you landed in Barry's Gordon?
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's on.
I'm sure I stopped in there one day.
It really is.
Just randomly and had a coffee there, you know.
I'm going to the bar. Look, it's great to meet you, Peter.
I'll
see you again.
Dennis O'Regan.
Dennis, how do you look? I have to look because my head is like a sieve. How do you? Let me get the pint of Guinness and then I'll happily talk to anybody. But I've been talking to people. Get it before
I'm sure we have electronically, perhaps. How are you?
Good to see you. I'm great.
You're also very Pacific.
I'm desperate. Not really, you know.
It was a compliment, by the way.
Don't tell me you noticed.
It was a compliment.
I tell you what. I can claim some sort of notoriety for quantity, none for quality.
Are you officially?
I will claim quantity, this quantity space.
There you go, yeah. Are you officially a member of the Twitterati then, yeah?
Have you been invited into the secret fold?
No, nobody ever invites me, right? I just...